Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show here on Raglan Community Radio, and I want to welcome Robs to the studio for our Nature Connection chat. Good morning, Robs.
Good morning, Aaron.
Nice day out there, isn't it?
Lovely.
Although
yeah.
I know you say that whatever the weather is, you like the day. So
it is, but you know, diversity is always nice. It's been so damn wet. Seeing a bit of blue sky is always makes me smile.
Yeah, you can't appreciate the blue sky without the grey sky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah. So we talk Nature Connection with Robs, who has an organisation called Kura Taiao, and a lot of, when we say Nature Connection, what are we really saying?
We say Nature Connection. But nature, yeah, beyond plants and birds and landscapes and environment, everything really. You know, our human nature, our own personal nature, community nature, and then obviously our relationship and connection with the natural world too.
That's why I say, what are we really saying with that phrase, is that a lot of people assume it's like bushcraft skills and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's very clear, having talked to you lots about this, that it's connecting to your own nature is probably at the core of what you're doing, it seems to me.
Yeah. I mean, obviously bushcraft and the skills to be able to spend lots of time in nature and develop those relationships are definitely part of it, because that opens doors.
Yeah,
but it's what's through the door that is important to me more than the actual practical skill set, in a way.
Can you connect to your own nature by other methods?
Yeah, everyone. We're all connected to whatever life you lived. There's elements in everyone's life where we connect into our own nature.
Yeah.
But then there's always elements which bring you away from that connection as well, especially with sort of modern life. And the more we strengthen those connections with ourselves and with the natural world, I feel the deeper sense of well-being and health and belonging we can experience.
Okay, so today you wanted to talk about gear.
We
all love gear. And I know that you're a man with gear. You have gear for making music.
Yeah.
Which I think you quite love.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Kind of love-hate relationship for that.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about gear. Kind of because it's been very wet, and I don't know why it took me years to notice this, but I realised and haven't for a long time owned any waterproof gear, really. And I thought that someone who does what I do might be a bit of a curious thing, because I think culturally we live in a very strong sense of gear and sort of consumables and whatever it is we do, really. But
especially
cool.
Outdoor gear for outdoor activities too.
I mean, you think in Hamilton, how many shops you can go to get? There's a ton of them. There's a hell of a lot of them.
It's,
you know, there's a reason for that, because it's popular and people like spending time outdoors and having so-called appropriate gear certainly encourages more of that.
So you said you noticed that you don't have waterproof gear. So was this not a conscious?
Nah, it's not a conscious thing. I just noticed a couple of weeks ago. Huh, I don't have a waterproof jacket. Huh, that's kind of interesting.
What was happening when you noticed that?
It
was pouring with rain, by any chance?
It was pouring with rain. I don't know what was happening. I can't remember what was happening.
It wasn't brought home to you by you.
No. Because the thing, I never get wet. That's the thing. Is
you never get wet?
Well, not really. It's been ages since I got wet. The last time I can remember getting wet, like proper wet, was on a bike when Matai was two, which was 12 years ago, because we had to cycle from about 80 kilometers in a rainstorm to Kaikoura, and there's nowhere to stop. And
What time of year was that?
That was summer. Summer.
Because so I've been down that way in winter, and it might have killed you.
Yeah. Well, but that was a long time ago.
Yes,
and seriously can't really remember being wet since then.
So obviously when you're biking, you're out in the open, you're on the road, and that's quite an open bit of road as well. But you're talking about, you're mostly in the bush.
Yeah.
And you're creating shelter, clearly.
Yeah, so I'm outside a lot, so it's not, you know, obviously I'm not always dry because I'm just sat inside all the time. I'm outside a lot. But the real reason why I've managed to stay dry all of these years is because of me not having a waterproof top or whatever. I really need to pay attention to the skies and changes in the wind and the weather. Mm. And that is where I want this conversation to go, because that's awesome. I love that I can look at the skies and it tells me a story. And if I did have a waterproof jacket, there'd be no reason for me to do that, because it doesn't matter what the sky is doing. I can, you know, cover up and bypass, you know, shortcut that danger, I guess you could call it a danger. But in doing so, in making things potentially a little bit harder, definitely cheaper, you can,
for sure.
it's an incentive to connect to the skies, and not just the skies, bird calls, so many things, everything's intertwined with nature. So insects.
Can you tell if something's coming from the birds? The birds know, because they're up higher than you, so...
Yeah. Oh, I don't think it's necessarily a visual thing for the birds. I think animals... Generally, I think they're just a bit more sensitive than we are, especially our modern-day human. Mm. I think we've desensitized a bit compared to the level of sensory connection that we might have had. So I think they're just a lot more sensitive, whether it's atmospheric pressures, what it is they're sensing. I couldn't tell you because I'm not necessarily sensing it.
But you're listening to them.
But they know.
And you've talked about, like, you listen to birds so much, you kind of understand... a lot of what their calls mean.
I'm putting words into your mouth. Like, it's not, you know, I speak Spanish, and it's not like, you know, I used to live in Spain, and you listen to conversations and then you know the word because it's relatable to a word in English. You know, but in nature you never really know, if that makes sense. You're open. You never hold on to a piece of information and hold it so tightly that you close off any doors to learn more deeply or to go further, because it always goes further in nature. As soon as you think, ah, cool, I know that now, I can close that chapter, that's really sad, because nature's never going to stop teaching you stuff. And there's so many different levels to everything in nature. So while there's definitely certain bird calls and sounds or behaviours or even body language that I recognise, I'm still watching that and observing that with a mindset that it's still got a lot to teach me, if that makes sense.
So if you're in the forest and you pick up hints that the weather might be changing, then what do you do?
Well, if it's lovely like it is today and the hint is saying it might not be lovely, differently lovely, let's say differently lovely, and not hate on rain.
Yes.
If that change is happening, then obviously my comfort is in danger and I need to act accordingly. So creating shelter, getting storage of firewood, making sure I've got means to make a fire, you know, a good fire kit. Which I'd have anyway, because it gets colder at night, obviously, when the weather is fine. Potential food sources. Sleep doesn't always come as easily. When it is a bit stormy, the winds usually swirl around a bit more, and that always wakes you up when you don't have a sleeping bag. So rest. And you find that with a lot of animals, as well, even farm animals. When the weather's coming, they'll rest beforehand. Graze in the more exposed places beforehand, so when it comes, they've got energy, they've got food to just sort of knuckle down.
So they graze in the exposed places, then they go into the sheltered places and they've still got food there.
And the warmer places. And then mindset, I think. Survival, I guess you could say, is all about mindset, really. Obviously there's a skill set there as well. But going into that wild weather mindset and switching down and just letting, really embracing it, letting your whole being slow down and be still and meditative. And, you know, that's that listening to nature when the time is to be energetic, when the time is to to hunt and to forage and to find resources and to rest. It's very dynamic.
So you create a shelter, mm-hmm. and then it rains for 4 hours, and you just stay in the shelter for 4 hours,
yep.
waiting.
Yep. Well,
I think a lot of modern humans would find that likely. Possibly the hardest bit. They can imagine being able to pick up the signs that the weather was changing, and they certainly can imagine building shelter.
Yeah.
But it's the sitting still. And
it can be hard, but that is absolutely the most rewarding bit as well, because once you get beyond that challenge, you know, yeah, you might be a bit restless for a while, but because nature's not really giving you a choice, you just have to surrender to it and accept it. And when you do that, it ceases to be challenging, and then you find the deep pool of calm and stillness within, which our modern world doesn't necessarily naturally facilitate. And that's really important to find that place from time to time. And nature almost creates the perfect situation for us to go into that on a regular basis and on a seasonal basis. But because of things such as gear, we often don't get to go there.
I was just thinking, like, a lot of people, that probably is why they go into the natural world, mm-hmm. is to seek what you're talking about. But I guess you're saying the more geared up you are, the more disconnected you are from that world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The less reason, you know, nature's there and in all its challenges, but each challenge is a thread of many threads of connection there for us to benefit from, you know, to feel like we belong in this world and to have a relationship with not just humans, but all the other beings that we walk alongside. And experiencing that is such a wonderful thing and such a deeply enriching thing, and it really makes you fall in love with the world in such a deep way, and living your life with that is incredible.
I feel like all my instincts and all our instincts are to avoid the things you do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to cover up, we need to keep warm.
Yep.
We need to protect ourselves from the natural world because presumably it's going to kill us.
Yeah,
I guess that's the, like, and that that's the nature. Underlying thing.
That is absolute nature as well, you know. I think if we went back in time before any of this stuff was invented, and you go to some tribe somewhere where they're living with very basic means and deep connection, but you offer them a lighter and a rain jacket, I think they'll be pretty excited for it.
Yeah,
that's human
yeah.
nature, you know. We're not here to make things hard for ourselves, and that's why we've created this world that we live in. And there's so many benefits to that. I'm not sort of, having a negative stance towards that. It's just in doing so, we do lose a lot of connection, and I just feel connection is something that we're missing, and we should value a lot more. So not necessarily get rid of all your gear and go and be uncomfortable because it's good for you, but just have awareness that connection, you know, the way that we live compared to how we have lived in the past. While there's so many positives to it, there is some gaps,
so,
and they're important.
So while you're not, like, you're obviously not telling everyone go out and get uncomfortable, that is what you do though. I mean, it's not everything you do. It's not everything you
kind
do,
of, yeah.
but you
I
do.
I mean, yeah, there is that. I'm not going out to be uncomfortable.
You're going, out,
going
to,
out
to get connected.
I'm going out to be comfortable. But when you don't have the gear to be comfortable, you
right.
have to work hard for your comfort. And that journey of working hard for your comfort is where you get a relationship with different plants and the resources and the lay of the land and landscape and navigation and the wind and the rain and all the other animals around you. And I was in the bush or on a beach last week, and I had a freezing cold night, and it certainly was uncomfortable. But from that experience, I learned so much, and doing it again and again, you know, I'll get to the stage where I do have the knowledge and the skill set to live in this world with very basic means and to be absolutely comfortable.
When Western civilization collapses, everyone's going to come looking for you. How do we cope, Rob?
They're all very welcome. Yeah, the door is always open.
Yeah, but we also, actually, to be honest, we do have a lot of gear, and in an emergency, the gear is awfully handy.
Yep.
And there's one thing that our society has, it's gear.
Yeah,
like we have it,
and plentiful.
Yeah,
and amazing gear. You know, like it's come from years and years of trial and error, and
there's so much gear,
research and technology. It's amazing.
It's so much stuff though that Extreme Zero Waste can't figure out what to do with it all.
Yeah,
it's trying to recycle it all.
That's the other side, isn't it?
Yeah, there's just so much.
Yeah.
So yeah, we don't need to worry about that actually.
But we could transition. So one piece of gear which I also don't have is a compass.
Oh,
and
yes.
Whilst a rain jacket obviously, you know, allows you to not worry about the weather too much, a compass sort of allows you to not worry too much about getting lost if you know how to use it well.
Yeah.
However, I think you know what I'm going to say, is if you don't have a compass and you get lost, what do? You pay attention, and that you enter the world of natural navigation where you're trying to find direction, not with something in your pocket, but with the world around you, which there's so many things in the world around us that are pointing direction to us.
Yeah.
If you stop and listen, and you're more likely to stop and listen if you need to stop and listen, i.e. you don't have that compass with you.
So there's often this kind of trope in stories about people get lost in the bush and they try to walk out and they end up back exactly where they are because they end up walking in a circle because humans are not perfectly symmetrical. We never walk perfectly straight.
Yeah.
But if you go up Kariwa, there's no way you're walking in a circle up there. You've got ridge lines and valleys and sorts of stuff.
I mean, you're a lot more... Yeah. I mean, if you just try walking in a straight line on your hill, you're probably more likely to go downhill slightly. Because of gravity.
It's just going to...
The imbalance of your body, like the imbalance of what you're walking on. Walking in a straight line is almost impossible for us humankind.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah, there is these theories of, you know, and people do walk in circles. It's if you walk to go down to the rugby pitch and try walking in a straight line with your eyes closed, you'll veer off to the side, and if that rugby pitch was big enough, you would end up not too far from where you started.
That would be an interesting exercise to do.
Get
a bunch of kids.
Everyone has their direction. Some go left, some go right, and it's good to know which way you veer, and also how many steps it takes you to walk a measured distance. Because if you are, lost and trying to be a bit more military about it, I guess.
Yeah.
You can gauge your distance by counting your steps as well.
When I was involved with the soccer club, I got really good at stepping out a meter. Like, it was really accurate. I could do a soccer pitch and be within half a meter.
Why?
But it's not why. It makes things easier when you're trying to set out a pitch at the start of the year. If you've got a rough idea where it needs to be,
it's mad image, and I know it's not you, but if you, before every soccer game, measuring the pitch, and if it's not
accurate,
if it's not regulation, like putting in a complaint. I know you'd never do that.
No, it's not the sort of thing I would complain about. But that's not my natural step. My natural step is a little bit under a meter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, if you're in the forest, you're not going to have a natural step anyway.
No.
But yeah. So what do you do? I've just talked about ways that won't work. So let's talk about the ways that do work.
To find navigation. So it's actually really hard. There's a whole field of awareness for natural navigation. And, there's things that are pointing north that probably no one's figured out yet. There's a lot. Every tree... Every animal knows the directions because the sun's so important to them, and I get that because sleeping out, being cold when the sun rises, and tracking the sun through the day, it makes a huge, huge difference to your day and your well-being and your energy levels. So plants obviously need the sun to eat.
Yeah.
So certain plants act like a satellite dish. Satellite dishes. Actually in town, I don't know if we can see any out the window here.
Not right now, but yeah.
But the satellite for them kind of sits kind of in line with Sydney, but quite a lot further north. So for us in Raglan, I think it's probably like 31 degrees. No, not 31 degrees. What would that be? 330 degrees or so.
Okay.
Which is... about northwest or just north of northwest. So if you're in the town, and you see satellite dishes, most satellite dishes, unless it's an Asian family, and then
they're going for something
else. They can go for a different one, obviously, because of the language. So that's a different satellite. So if you're in town, that's a pretty handy way of that's quite direction.
That's kind of funny. Like I was expecting you to talk about, oh yeah, if you look at the south side of the tree, it's got the moss on it, and you're like, look at the satellite dishes where they go. But it's the same kind of thinking.
It is. It's sign, you know. Yeah. It is. It's absolutely the same sort of thing. Whether it's the trees and the leaves are orientated a certain direction, things, houses, architecture, obviously, we're that's nature as well, you know. We're trying to maximize the heat and the light of the day, so we've got more windows on the north side, or we orientate our buildings that way.
We don't always, but we should.
We should.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you mentioned moss. Moss isn't something I use because moss prefers moisture to darkness. So it's usually on the damper side, which obviously can be the south side. But given the nature of our bush here, which is very up and down and steep, and moisture is always down the hill,
yeah.
So moss will often point downhill there. Certain species, if you think, imagine a rugby pitch again, and someone plants a big tree in the middle of that, and just one tree, and it's on flat land and it's not compromised, there's nothing around it to give it shade. Obviously it's a bit windy, so the wind will play its part, but the shape of that tree will become an awesome compass, because it will have heavier growth on the north side. We'll have flatter branches on the north side and the southern side.
Say fatter or flatter?
Flatter.
Flatter.
Yeah.
Flat branches.
Flatter and more branches on the north side and on the south side, because it's sort of reaching level with all its foliage to try and get as much energy from the sun as it can. But the southern side, they need to grow more vertical. They need to grow up.
Yeah.
And they have to sort of reach over the other ones. And they call that the tick effect, because if you sort of draw a line... you know, with how the branches are growing, it kind of creates a tick. So that's in flat, uncompromised terrain, but in the bush it's quite different. So in the bush you'll be looking for a ridge and looking for a tree, which like a rewa, which pops out above the canopy, where there's nothing compromising it there, and then that can be a good compass for you.
Okay.
As well, geology, rocks are sort of layered. We know, because of the fault line we're on, that in a bigger picture, our mountain ranges kind of go from north to south, not quite north to south, a little bit sort of south-southeast to north-northwest.
Yeah,
that line,
yeah.
You know, the ranges just by the Divi follow that, and the Southern Alps and the Kaimais and pretty much all our mountain ranges follow that.
Yeah.
So then the sub-ridges are more east-west.
Right, so those, the main ridges will maintain their height. The sub-ridge will fall down, I guess.
Yeah. And then there'll be sub-ridges off that and so on. But all useful things.
How important is it to know north, though?
Well, if you don't want to be lost, it's really important for me to know which way I'm heading, because I'm never on a track.
Yeah.
And my memories, I wish it was, but it's not necessarily so good. And pick like a photographic memory that I can just picture every tree I walk past and be able to turn around and find my way.
No, that would be impressive.
So knowing which direction I'm heading, always.
Yeah.
And at any given time, I know where I've come from, and I can turn around and I'll probably be following a slightly different track back, but I'll get pretty close to where I started. So in that sense, it's important. But the night times are really challenging when you're in the bush and you don't have gear with you. And knowing where the winds are coming from, knowing where the sun's going to rise, knowing where the warm spots are going to be when it does come up, that's huge. That's like really important to know. Especially the wind, really, which is a tough one, because obviously when there's all these different angles and hills, it's bouncing off them and creating eddies and kind of going all over the place. But yeah, it's foundational. But as such, being able to navigate life, always knowing which way you're facing and which way you're going, again, it's just that feeling of connection, and it's really nice. That's a good thing.
I was reading recently, and I think I've read about them before, there's some cultures where when they say, like if I said to you, can you pick up your phone, it's to your right, and those cultures, they would say, that's to the west.
Yep.
And like, and that's, they never say to your left or right.
I encourage everyone. I think I was on a show a few months ago, and I was giving five tips or something to bring connection into your everyday life. And that's a great thing to do, just get rid of left and right.
Forward and back. And
as
just
best as you can, use your north, east, south, west.
Presumably, I've read that their ability to know where north is phenomenal. And it must become subconsciously picking up lots of signals because it starts from as soon as you can understand the language. That's how you get told to find things.
Yeah.
It's to your north, it's to your south.
Absolutely. In fact, coming back from, we were driving back and it was roads I'd never been on, and they look different from, you know, the return trip because they're backwards.
Yeah.
So we were trying to figure out how to get back to Waihi, because that was the nearest town. And we're driving along, and I mean, it's obvious because Waihi was to the west. So basically, any road which goes to the west,
it's going
to take us to Waihi.
Theoretically.
So after a moment of like, oh, is it this road or that road? Just clicking in, it's west, so let's just go west. And obviously, that was the road, and we end up back there. But yeah, that's an example of how we don't use direction, you know, when we get lost, because we don't usually know, even though we use maps, you don't usually necessarily think, oh, Hamilton's to the west, and you sort of see the inner map within you.
Yeah.
And, you know, roads work like that. Roads do work like that.
You know, something I have noticed when driving, which is probably similar to what you're getting when you're in the forest, is, and I think I can think of this, when you drive around to Rupuki, so you go around the mountain to Te Mata and then head out, you can feel when you're getting close to the coast, and I don't really know what it is. It's probably the absence of ridge-like mountains in the distance, but there's just a feeling that you know you're close to the coast and it's just going to be a few minutes, you'll be able to see the ocean.
Mm.
And I guess that's what's happening in the bush for you. Maybe that's the comparison.
And it's a good example because often you can smell the ocean before you see it. So navigation isn't just visual
And we don't think about stuff like that much.
No. You know, with all your senses, and just because we're running out of time, the reason that I bring up navigation is something that I practice a lot in the summer months. Obviously it's sort of easier with the sleeping out, with the warmer temperatures, but I'd encourage anyone who gets outdoors, and I know a lot of you will be planning to head outdoors, of making a game of wherever you are every once in a while, just without using the compass. See if you can test yourself and go, all right, which way is north from where we are? And play that as much as you can, whether you're in town, whether you're in the bush, at the beach, wherever you are. Just keep playing it. Play it with your kids. Play it with anyone around you. Don't worry. Have no fear of being wrong. But just give, you know, let that enter your mind for your field of awareness, and you'll get more and more accurate as you do it. And along, like I said at the start of this, it's the journey and the things you learn along that journey. It's not necessarily this outcome of knowing where north is and being good at it.
Or ticking off a skill.
But the process of doing that, you're going to learn about clouds, you're going to learn about winds, you're going to learn about trees, you're going to learn about animals and insects and so many different parts of nature. And it's something we can all do, and it's easy, and it takes a minute. And so give it a go. Give it a go, people. Mm. And if you ever see me around, tell me your stories of how you did.
Do you want to mention any stuff coming up this term or anything like that?
With
Kura Taia?
Yeah, we'll have... we just had a family day yesterday, but we'll do in probably late November another sort of community bushcraft day, family day. I'm in the process of getting a new website done, which will have online booking, so I'm kind of holding off a little bit for that to be done, to really be pumping the classes a bit more.
Yeah.
But you can find me on Facebook or the existing website, kurataio.com.
Okay. That's KURATAIAO. Cool. All right, Rob, thanks for coming in.